Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with three lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
So what do we learn today on this Tuesday? I learned a ton. And we started with a guy named Tony Hooper, who is a CEO of a group that not only do they run restaurants, but they help other restaurants be more effective in what they do. Tony really was bringing it in terms of financial decision-making within restaurants. Take a listen to Tony Hooper, our first guest on this Tuesday.
23 minutes until 3 o'clock here in Pittsburgh. We are delighted to be joined by Troy Hooper, who is a CEO involved in many different facets of the restaurant business, including asset management, including franchising, also helping others to grow their businesses. And, oh, by the way, they operate restaurants as well. Troy, it is great to have you on the program today. Welcome to KDKA.
Hey, thanks for having me, Rick. Glad to be here.
Restaurants have been faced with so many challenges as of late, and we're going to talk to Carrie Luxem coming up at the top of the hour about the HR issues of staffing and things like that. But I want to bring you in because you deal with helping restaurants run their businesses more efficiently, helping them to make some decisions, what their assets are and things like that. With rising costs for food, and everybody knows what's going on with eggs, right? I mean, how do you make a decision about, well, we're just going to have to cut back on something else because we can't raise our prices on our menu because we have to then print more menus. And if we do that, it's going to cost us more money than what we're going to. I mean, do you see what I'm saying? I mean, how do you prioritize? How do you help people make those hard decisions?
Well, the first thing we do is we require them to remain calm and don't react to micro hyperinflationary pressures in the market, right? So we see this very cyclically, and we're used to it from that perspective. But these ultra high moments of eggs being 2 to 3 times, you know, we had the big run on chicken in 2020 and 2021 in the pandemic. Everybody ate chicken wings, and the price, you know, we ran out of chicken wings literally, and the price went skyrocketing there because of demand. So there's always different reasons for the pressures and changes. We ask them to always remain calm. The strategy is to have a strategy, is to have a plan, have a pricing structure and a menu engineering strategy that makes sense for your business and stick to it, right? The idea is not to react to every change in the market because your consumer will kind of get whiplash whether you're changing prices or changing items on your menu, or changing the quality of the items, possibly even changing the portion sizing. These are all tactics that we've seen in the past that usually have a more negative effect in your relationship with the customer than they do have a positive effect to your bottom line. So you're right. Most restaurants are just taking the gut. They're taking the punch and hopefully getting smarter about their buying, paying more attention to what they're buying, what they're paying for, how much they're buying at a time, who they're buying it from, but also really thinking about their menu, is their menu as efficient as it can be? Does it have what the consumer really wants? And can they take some things off that the consumer is not as excited about to make it a more efficient operation? So that's kind of how we start thinking about it and the basis for the conversation to help operators, stay in their lane and not get derailed by these really rare and really intense moments of unique price structure changes that are happening to them.
When you say menu efficiency, is that simply a matter of paying attention to how many times does somebody order this particular meal as opposed to that one? If we want to have five different chicken dishes on the menu, do we have to have seven? I mean, is that, do I understand that right?
Yeah, so basically, exactly. We find in, you know, most independent and small chain operators, and even, you know, let's not talk about Cheesecake Factory, 290 items on the menu. The reality is most menus are have too many items on them. So what does that mean? We have too many ingredients in the storage, you know, in our refrigeration and in our dry storage. We're prepping. We're spending a lot of time prepping ingredients that we might sell two or three or 12 of in a day, as compared to our top five items where we might sell 30, 50, 100 of those items in a day. And so the question is if you were to take that item, those low performing items off, what efficiencies are you adding to your business? Reduced labor and preparation, reduced cooking labor, reduced waste in product that you create that nobody buys, confusion and dilution of your customers' choices. So very often, more choices is a problem compared to less choices, and that's why we see some of these emerging concepts like these Nashville hot chicken style concepts that have, you know, anywhere from 3 to 9 menu items total, from Dave's Hot Chicken or Houston's Hot Chicken or Hattie B's, these kinds of concepts. You know, that's sort of an extreme example of what I'm talking about being hyper efficient with your menu. That's very niche, but for the average operator, it's really about thinking about, what am I buying? What am I making? Who's buying it? When are they buying? Are they buying enough of it to have me keep making more of it? Or should I pare this down? Should I get a little bit more efficient in my overall operation and what I'm offering?
So, Troy, you're talking about making decisions that, and not panicking, right? I mean, and making sure that you assess the situation before you make a change. How long should that be? Should that be a quarter? Should that be a year? I mean, the reality is for new businesses, that first year or two is so hard just to get through it. You don't want to wait too long or you're out of business, right? I mean, how long is the right amount of time?
Yeah, you know, this is something we talk to our operators about. You know, you're really focused on this on a monthly basis as a newer, smaller operator who has a lot of other things to deal with. You know, the big guys are looking at some of this stuff by the hour, by the day, you know, et cetera. We try to get operators to go from an occasional review, annual review, semi-annual review with their accountant. We try to get them down to a monthly sort of what we call a status or a flash report on a monthly basis. Ultimately, we want to get them down to looking at these things on a weekly basis. You really, really have to understand that every time you place an order with your purveyors that provide you your products, they're changing their prices daily, right? If not,
oh, yeah, right.
In some
yeah.
cases.
Yep.
Yep. So we got to get you as the operator paying attention to your prices coming in, you know, costs coming in and your prices going out a little more often. So we start them off going from never to occasional to down to at least monthly. Ultimately, we really want most of our restaurant partners really focused on a weekly analysis. And by the way, technology has really advanced in the last 3 to 4 years, especially during the pandemic. We saw tremendous investments and advancements. And so now much of this stuff is automated for you. You can set up these reports, set up these systems. They're all interconnected now. And so what we're spending a lot of time doing is getting operators modernized, getting these systems in place, so that it is less, manual of a process, less subjective of a process, but far more automated and provided. The information is provided to them, and all they have to do is make a decision on the analytics given to them. So there's a big shift in the restaurant industry right now to modernize and update and adopt technologies that will make them more efficient, a lot smarter, and more nimble to do this a lot more often than they ever have.
We think about the golden rule that the person who has the gold makes the rules, right? So who then is in charge? Is it the restaurant operator because they've got the cash and they want to buy the product? Or is it the supplier saying, this is what we're going to charge? And if you're the operator, how do you push back against price increases? It seemed to every time you turn around, there's another one coming down.
You hit the nail right on the head. We have always essentially, if you have less than 20 or so, 15 or 20 locations, you have been completely beholden to the supplier. The supplier is the God that controls all things in your life, and you've had to suck it up or react to it in some way, shape, or form for history. Yeah. What we're seeing now, obviously, as suppliers took a big hit in the pandemic, as they did things that may have really harmed their clients, the small clients particularly, there's a lot more leverage on the buying power of the operator. So we're seeing a lot more aggressive conversation. A lot smaller organizations are able to negotiate, and we saw a lot of new suppliers pop up small boutique suppliers pop up to sort of fill in the gaps where the big suppliers kind of, screwed us over in a way in some cases. So, we're seeing a lot of movement towards group purchasing organizations and cooperatives where groups are getting together and consolidating their buying power and leveraging that in negotiations. So it still is the supplier, but we're still really beholden to the supplier, but the suppliers now understand that, that we're a lot smarter. We know our numbers a lot better than we ever have. We are paying attention in places where we may not have as we should have. And now we're coming back and pushing back. And so we are seeing a lot more, negotiating power being leveraged in that relationship.
Dan, this has been really, really wonderful. It's obvious that you could talk about this for months, and we're just trying to drink out of a fire hose right now from your knowledge that is out there. So thank you so much for getting the conversation started for us today on KDK. It's great to have you on the program, and I'd love to have you back.
Thanks, Rick. Love to do it anytime.
All right, good stuff.
Thanks for bringing up the topic and sharing it.
Excellent. Troy Hooper joining us, CEO. And again, the group is called Kiwi Restaurant Partners. Yes, they're dealing with franchisees. They're helping restaurants. They also own and operate restaurants. Gives you an idea of some of the issues, some of the things that they are faced with right now. Carrie Luxem followed him up. She is a CEO, and what she does in Chicago is run a group called the Restaurant HR Group. Yes, they're talking about employees and how to keep them, but more than that, how do you help an employee to understand that there's more to it than what their hourly wage is on their W-2? How do you keep employees in this very, very hard time where everybody is looking for people to hire? Carrie Luxem on KDKA. One of my favorite guests coming up right now, Carrie Luxem. She is based in the Windy City, where she is the CEO of the Restaurant HR Group. And we've had Carrie on the program a number of times. And when I say that she's one of my favorite guests, it's not just because she can hear me right now on the phone. Carrie, I would say that even if you could not hear me, and there was no way to vouch that that's what I said, I promise.
Right. Oh, okay. I believe you. How are you?
I am great. How are you?
I'm doing fantastic. Thank you. Thanks for having me on again.
Yeah, we were just talking with Troy Hooper, who you know, and we were talking about, the challenges that restaurants are dealing with in terms of making decisions about what's on their menu and what do we do with food costs and do we raise our prices? Do we keep them where they are? Do we panic now? Do we wait and panic later? Right. I mean, just dealing with those kind of things. But for you, you're dealing with the HR side of things in terms of not only hiring, but keeping people in the restaurants. And I don't mean people in the seats who are coming in to eat, but the staff and keeping them motivated and keeping them going through these very difficult times. We've had you on in the past to talk about what was going on in the restaurant business, but where are we right now in January of 23, as you look at it through a national lens now, where are we?
Well, I mean, I think there's still the stresses out there and, inflation and this economic flux has people up in arms for sure. But I will tell you that the clients that I have, the industry in general, nationwide, the restaurant leaders that stay laser focused on their people. I mean, there's no doubt that the last few years have changed a lot and kind of where we are right now. But If you stay focused on the right things, that's your purpose, and really just staying focused on taking care of your people, you're going to come out ahead when it comes to staffing. But it's still messy, Rick. It's still, it's still hard to find staff. But, when you're purposeful and you're proactive and taking care of your people and you really focus on ensuring that your people have balance. I mean, that's where we are right now. People don't just come to work. People want to make more money. There's no doubt about that. But when people make a decision on where they're going to work, it's really about working for good people. And I've been saying for years and years, great leadership is really about making emotional connections and being a good human being. And that's really just coming to light. People want to work somewhere where they feel like they're going to be taken care of, that they're cared about. Money is one thing, benefits are another, but just really that someone's going to come to work and care about their life, care about their balance, care about their happiness. And the employers that can give people that are going to have less stressed when it comes to staffing.
I hear what you're saying, and I completely agree with it, that there's more to it than money. But do the people on the street agree with that? Meaning,
I think they do.
Do you think so? Okay. Okay. Absolutely. Why so?
I mean, I just think about, you know, I always like that I'm a CEO now and I have a small team, and I talk a lot about building a company and culture and what it takes. And it's a lot of work and it's a challenge for me, you know, and I think when you really look at what's going on in the world and think about yourself and your kids and your grandkids or your whatever, you know, if you really think about what matters to most people, it's about being in a place that's not super stressful. It's about being happier. And what does that really mean? It's about the leaders of the company exercising common courtesy and, you know, recognizing those small life events that happen every day, calling just to say hi, you know, being a place that cares about your learning and growing and all that. And I know it matters because the clients that do this well in my world are the ones that have less stress when it comes to being understaffed, when you really put the energy into it. And it's not to say it's not hard, and it's definitely something that people have to focus on. But when you don't do it, you know, you are losing, and you are the ones that are not able to operate your restaurants because you don't have people. It's just the way that it is. So it's definitely something that matters.
Are restaurant operators able to find staff now, or have those people moved on to other types of jobs? Are they doing something else? They loved waiting table. They loved working at a restaurant. They loved being a line cook. But you know what? There just wasn't enough there. Whether it was internal, you know, rewards, or whether it was the money rewards, have they moved on? Are they doing something else?
Yeah, I mean, I think at some level throughout this pandemic, there was a shift and people went to work other places because there was, you know, more flexibility or whatever it is. I will tell you, I feel like people are still really excited about this industry. It really just depends on the employer, the restaurateur. What's their purpose? Are they good people? Are they focusing on the right things? Do they have simple systems? And are they hiring and encouraging people to be great leaders? So I would say, well, it has been a shift. There has been some turning in, you know, not going to work in restaurants. I feel like that's lessening, you know, as we evolve and get into 2023. I feel like we're coming back. And you know me well enough to know I'm very passionate about this industry. Mm-hmm. I think this is an industry that has so much to offer so many people. But, you know, it comes down to leadership. And if you don't have restaurants, you know, it's like I always say, like, you can say all day long, you know, I want to have a company that people feel great and are healthy and happy and balanced, but they're working, if people are working 80 hours a week, it's like your actions aren't really, you know, matching your words. And that's how, you know, you get a reputation for not wanting to be, you know, a place that people want to come and work.
So help me with this, Carrie. Help me with this. If you're an operator, right, and you're advertising for people, immediately people put on a sign, $15 an hour. That is, as you're saying, not the most important thing. How do you advertise that this is a place that values people, that wants you to have work-life balance, that fill in the blank, the other things that people may want? How do they do that? Because everybody wants to know the first question is, what are you paying? How do you get past that?
Yeah, you're right. I mean, pay does matter. It does matter, but it is not everything, because you can say, I'm going to pay you 19 and the guy over there is paying you 17. You might get to hire that person, but if you're a bad employer, you're overworking
your
people.
You're not keeping them. They're not going to stay.
You're not training them properly. Yep. So how do you advertise for that? Well, first of all, you tell your story. And if you're really a good company, and by telling your story, it's, what's your story? Who are you? What's your mission? What's your purpose? Why do you do what you do? What other people are they working with? You know, a lot of people do, like, showing what it feels like to work in their restaurants or whatever it may be. You know, it's literally showing that you care about more than just that person as an employee. Mm-hmm. You care about that person as a person. And that means a whole lot of things. It could be anything from celebrating someone, you know, showing on social media that you're celebrating that somebody just graduated from college. You know, it's like you're not directly, you know, always take your recruiting hat off and show people who you are from the inside. And so long as it's true, if you're really a good place and you really are not working your people 80 hours a week, and you really do stop and say, hi, how are you? And care about the answer. That kind of stuff goes such a long way. And if you really are genuinely a good person that's leading a company, you can impact the lives of so many people, but they have to know you care. How do they know you care? Consistently being a good person, consistently telling the truth, consistently being vulnerable. It's like those are the ways that you're going to attract people. And it's just like getting, you know, people, operators put so much effort into the employee, or I'm sorry, into the customer experience, right? We're losing customers. Inflation is high. So what are they doing? They're out there putting all this effort into customers, how they're going to feel when they get into the restaurant.
And they forget about the people in the kitchen and on the floor, right?
Put that same effort into the employee experience and you are going to win.
Yep.
So I'm not saying don't put effort into the customer experience. Of course that matters. But watch what happens when you take care of the people that are taking care of that customer. When you put the effort into the employee experience, what do I want my employee to feel when they walk in? You know, what do I want my customer to feel? I'm sure most operators can answer that. And they could probably talk about that for days. Let's focus on the employee experience. Let's focus on letting them come to work and feel that same level of passion for, you know, the purpose that you have, your mission, your vision, and all that. And I think sometimes it's missed. And I'm telling you again, the clients that I have or the connections that I have in this industry that do that very well, they're winning. They're more profitable. I'm not saying that it's not hard right now with inflation and all that. It's still hard, but
you can win. It does happen, and you can get there. It's too bad you're not passionate about what you do. If you just had a little more excitement, Carrie.
I'm sorry.
This is great. No. This is absolutely great. And thank you for opening up some doors for us to talk about here today in terms of how do we lead with passion and how do we do that? And not just in the restaurants, but all other places as well. Carrie, it's great. Great to have you here. Thanks for jumping in.
Thank you. Thanks a lot.
Awesome. Carrie Luxem joining us. And again, her company, where she's the CEO, is Restaurant HR Group. She deals with all those issues and helps people navigate them too. Also on the program, Monica Eaton. She is the founder of Chargeback 911. What is a chargeback? Well, that's what happens if you call your bank and you say that something went wrong with a transaction that you used your credit card for. That vendor ultimately gets hit with a chargeback, and it's more than them simply having to pay back the money. They also basically get a smudge or a black mark on their reputation. That is a huge issue in the credit card industry. And Monica says that plus fraud are some of the biggest issues that are facing vendors right now when it relates to taking credit cards. 3:37 on KDKA. You know, one of the things that I've been thinking about since Carrie Luxem was on about the truths that she was talking about as it relates to dealing with other people. Yes, she was talking about you own a restaurant and what do you do for your employees in that restaurant setting? The people who are taking orders, the people who are up front, the house staff, if you will. Exactly what do we do in that regard? And she was talking about leadership, and she was talking about how we take care of our people and how we treat our people. That's not just a restaurant thing. That is not just a restaurant thing at all. That is something that we can use anywhere. And I think it's safe to say that what we're about to talk about next here on the program is something else that a lot of people are seeing everywhere, and that is the use of credit cards, and more than that, the increase that is happening when it comes to credit card fraud. In the first half of 2022, there was a 700% increase in credit card fraud. Skimmers, those illegal devices put on maybe a gas pump or an ATM, point-of-sale terminals that basically are stealing not only your credit card data, but also your PIN. It is a significant, significant issue. And joining us right now to talk about how that has continued to be an issue is one by the name of Monica Eaton. She is the founder of a company that is called Chargeback 911. And Monica, it is great to have you joining us here on KDKA. How are you?
I'm good. Thank you for having me. Great to be here.
What's the biggest issue right now when it comes to credit card fraud? Is it these skimmers? Is it people buying something, returning it, trying to get their money back and not pay? I mean, canceling orders. I mean, what's the biggest issue right now?
Man, it is, we have the perfect storm.
Yeah.
It's literally, it's a combination. I think it's definitely, you know, there's more criminal activity and probably because, of course, the entire ecosystem has changed since COVID. You know, people's behaviors have changed. There's new merchants that are entering, you know, spheres that they've never done any business in. And as a result, all of these different loopholes are being exploited by fraudsters. Plus, you have a lot of consumers that are exploiting the system as well. So I think, you know, we have new everywhere. Mm-hmm. And whenever you have new, then it increases new opportunities, new technology, but also a lot of new challenges for fraud.
Monica, when we think about, you were talking about new businesses, and one of the things that a lot of those small businesses are doing is using, they take a credit card, but they do it through maybe Square, or they do it through PayPal, or they do it through a third-party vendor rather than the traditional way of doing things, because in some cases it may cost them less. They don't have to pay as high a percentage or high a per-charge transaction and things like that. Is that part of the issue? I don't see where that's creating fraud, but it's different, right? I mean, it's new, and I think that maybe that is part of what we're dealing with right now. It's not always the way that it's been before.
Yeah, I mean, I think I don't think that the problem is isolated to a single processor, or, you know, whether it's Square or whether it's Stripe, etc. It's more related to, you know, people are multitasking, and it's you know, whenever you lose focus, then, and you are doing things in multiple arenas, you're going to have, you know, more opportunity for risk. So it used to be that a merchant would get one merchant account and that's it. It used to be that a merchant would have a website and they would only sell in the U.S. and that's it.
Yeah.
Today, you have five different merchant accounts. You sell in 20 different countries.
Mm-hmm.
You process in multiple currencies, and you have three different fraud filters.
Right.
And you also have two different CRMs, lots of gateways. And so it's managing the complexities, and not only that, but you sell online, you sell through an app, you sell through the phone, and you also have a store present environment. So I think that's the challenge, is each of these, you know, environments really requires a different set of rules. It's different customer engagement, it's different behaviors, and there's different opportunities to exploit loopholes in each one. And it's very difficult for a retailer to master all at the same time, but it's impossible for a retailer to maintain a competitive edge unless they enter into all these arenas. It's that omni-channel challenge, I think.
Monica Eaton joining us here on KDK. Monica, you've used the term chargebacks a couple of times. Define that for us so we're all on the same page in terms of what you mean, and make sure that we understand that.
Sure. So a chargeback is simply when a consumer purchases something, generally an online purchase, and instead of going to the retailer to get a refund, then they go to their bank. Most of the time, they're innocently filed, and they end up creating a fine and a fee for the retailer. The retailer is debited for the transaction, and you can look at it as this kind of a traffic ticket. So it's this irreversible negative statistic, and if a retailer receives too many chargebacks, then they get put on a blacklist and they can lose their merchant processing account. So they can defend the chargeback, but you can never reverse the negative statistic.
So you can maybe talk your way out of a ticket, for instance, by going to court, but it doesn't mean that you still don't pay the court costs, right? I mean, there's still something to pay.
Yes, and that negative statistic never erases.
Yes, it's always there. That's on the merchant then, right? I mean, it's not on the consumer. They don't take a black mark onto their record. It's just on the merchant. I mean, is that the biggest issue that is going on right now? You have to take credit cards. If you don't, how do you do online transactions? How do you do, you know, apps? How do you do those sorts of things? And yet at the same time, it's a pain in the, you know what, to deal with credit cards sometimes. I mean, I see where merchants are coming from.
Oh, sure. No, that statistic, that is a tremendous issue. And you know, it continues to grow because, I mean, let's face it, we have this
we have this issue. I'm sure you've heard of the word frictionless. You know, mm-hmm. today's consumer, which is driving trends, we want things instant. We want it fast. We already know that it's secure. We already know that we're protected by our bank. We want instant gratification. And so, you know, this has really created a new standard and a way of doing business across the board. With COVID, there were so many issues that really we lowered all the barriers for consumers. So today, all you need to do to dispute a transaction and get an immediate refund from your bank is go to the app on your phone and press a few buttons. And unfortunately, there's a lot of misunderstandings with regard to what actually happens when you do that. Yeah. That creates a penalty for the merchant that you bought from. And even though most of these consumers, they're honest, it's innocent, they think, hey, this is just more convenient, it's faster, it's instant, why do I need to contact that retailer to cancel my subscription? I can just have my bank do it. Behind the scenes, it's a very bad habit that is getting out of control.
So then should you call the merchant first of all and give them an opportunity to make it right? Is that what you're suggesting?
Absolutely, absolutely. And any merchant is interested in avoiding chargebacks.
Yes,
they want to
right.
avoid it.
Right.
They believe it or not, every merchant cares about customers. We all need customers. So yes, consumers should always, you know, advocate and contact that merchant first. Filing a chargeback is not the same as contacting a merchant and getting a refund.
Is it okay to even say to that customer service representative, listen, the last thing I want to do is create a problem with you through a chargeback. Can we make this right? I mean, I'm not saying you're negotiating with them, but if you just let them know that you understand that, are they more likely to hear you and help you?
For sure. Absolutely. I don't think, you know, many consumers, they'll escalate to a manager, they'll escalate to whatever. If a merchant understands, look, you know, I don't want to call my bank.
Yeah.
This is my issue. At the end of the day, I think every merchant is in business to sell their products and make customers happy. They're just as concerned about a bad reputation online as they are about chargebacks. Probably more concerned about chargebacks, to be frank.
Yeah, because that hits them in the bottom line.
They don't want a bad reputation. They want to be able to salvage, you know, a good reputation and take care of these customers.
Monica, this is great. Thank you very, very much. And again, you know, sometimes defining things that you use all the time and that we hear, it doesn't mean that we understand exactly what they are. So thank you for stepping us through these things as it relates to credit card and fraud and chargebacks. I really, really appreciate you jumping on with us today on KDKA.
Absolutely. Have me anytime. Great talking with you.
Very much appreciate it. Monica Eaton, founder of Chargeback 911, talking about these big issues as it relates to merchants and dealing with credit cards and credit card companies and processing. Those are just some of the things we learned on KDKA. If you missed a program on a given day, you miss a lot. So make sure you're with us on Wednesday as we go through 2 until 6 on KDKA each and every day, hopefully getting smarter together. See you on the radio starting at 2 on Wednesday.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of 4 amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get 4 iPhone 15s on us and 4 lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto-pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto-pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well-qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.
Protect your vehicle's engine with a full synthetic oil change and save with Mobil 1 at O'Reilly Auto Parts. Purchase 5 quarts of Mobil 1 full synthetic motor oil and receive a $10 O'Reilly gift card after rebate. See store for details. With your Mobil 1 purchase, you'll also receive 2x points during Old Rewards Bonus Points Month at O'Reilly Auto Parts.
Oh, 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 O'Reilly Auto Parts.
Protect your vehicle's engine with a full synthetic oil change and save with Mobil 1 at O'Reilly Auto Parts. Purchase 5 quarts of Mobil 1 full synthetic motor oil and receive a $10 O'Reilly gift card after rebate. See store for details. With your Mobil 1 purchase, you'll also receive 2x points during Old Rewards Bonus Points Month at O'Reilly Auto Parts.
Oh, 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 O'Reilly Auto Parts.